It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Oh, but there's plenty of reasons to be afeard. You know, but it's hard to be afraid when you're watching them make the horror movie from behind the cameras and you see all the microphones and all the pomp and circumstance and all the production and everything that goes into the choreography of Boo. Boo. I mean, you know, how many times can you go Boo? And you start to, you know, just go, please, can you stop being so childish? Well, here we go again. GOP to unveil new contract with America on Thursday. House Republicans to outline new election year agenda focused on pocketbook issues and security. Yeah, I got that security thing in there. House Republicans are planning to unveil a roughly 20-point election year policy agenda Thursday at a hardware store in suburban Virginia. GOP officials said party leaders will go public with a plan focused on jobs, spending, health care, national security, and reforming Congress. They'll brief lawmakers on it late Wednesday. The officials spoke on condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to discuss the plan. It comes 6 weeks before midterm congressional elections in which Democrats are bracing for major losses, possibly big enough to cost them control of the House. Republicans unveiled their contract with America on September 20th, 1994. Some 6 weeks before gaining 54 seats and seizing control of the House for the first time in 40 years. I've been through this before. And I'm telling you, I remember what happened last time. It was midterm election after 1992 where Bill Clinton went up against Daddy Bush and Ross Perot. You guys remember that? Some of you do. You know, I was, you know, as much as people would, on a national level, consider me being part of the Ron Paul Revolution thing, one of the reasons why I knew it was going to happen is because of how involved I was with the Ross Perot thing, but not at a level that you would think, and certainly, you know, not inside the campaign or anything. Today would be a good time to tell that story. We have some other stuff going, but I think this is a good time to tell that story and my involvement from various different directions and why with Ross Perot in 92. I recognize all of the same things happening now with all of the same people. You know, they just count on you forgetting. Because, heck, you know, who told you anyway? Nobody ever shared this stuff with you. Well, I was there. So I'll give you a little bit of, you know, from the activist point here. Because Arizona was the highest vote percentage for Ross Perot in the nation. It's like 20-something percent. You know, 20%, whatever it was. And this is after he dropped out and came back in. Why was Arizona the highest? Why is it always Arizona? Well, I'm going to share this with you. You want to get out some pen and paper as I start reminiscing and throwing out names and dates and times and who's and what for's and everything. Maybe want to make some notes so you can go Google some stuff. And all of a sudden you'll go, oh, I get it. We're just being manipulated again. Well, that's how we do it. So here we go. But this is what we're going to go ahead and do. Today, we had a guest that was scheduled today, and we had a conflict and everything. We'll go ahead and reschedule her. But she had something that was of interest. You know, it's on the investigation into the octopus. You know, this is the last circle. And what it's really about is the Promise software scandal. When there's, you have Echelon and you have Carnivore and you have all of what happens is they sell and create software and sell it to everybody across the planet, and they leave a back door in for the man. And they'll go in and say, ooh, you put all your goodies on that, did you, Iran? Well, guess what? We already know that. So anyway, so that'll be a good show. And we had a scheduling conflict a little bit there. We'll go ahead and reschedule that because today's a good time for me to give you this, and we won't try and rush her and, you know, get her just to throw her papers together and do it. So we'll go ahead and tell her that we'll get her rescheduled and have her talk to the producers here and we'll get taken care of. Okay. We'll do that. Because I'm going to today, in the first hour, I'll share this little bit of history with you. Now's a good time to do it. Because after Ross Perot had done his 92 thing, there was everybody there inside. They're going, what the heck just happened? Well, you ever see on Fox News a guy named Frank Luntz? Okay. Frank Luntz, man, the Ron Paul Revolution youngins, they love to hate him. I mean, he's just a tool for the man. Well, where he came from was out of the Ross Perot thing. He went around for a year and a half or so at the behest of, you know, the peoples and, the Gingrich and all these guys and so on. And certainly he got tied in with them because what he did is he went to all these different groups that were kind of the equivalent of the meetup groups that you have now during the 08 campaign. And there are all these different organizations and groups. They're just people. They'd put, they had a classified in the paper, or they just announced to their friends that they're, meeting somewhere. And I've been to these things. In small towns like Prescott, Arizona, they had 700-800 people every week that were meeting. I go speak to them. I go to Tucson. They had a big auditorium at a hotel down there, a big room that they rented. 700-800-900,000 people. It was just amazing. You just packed it in there. And all I did to speak on was the law, the election law, because I had 44 election laws. I was challenging all the way to the Ninth Circuit at the time. I'd filed a lawsuit just, months before all this started. So I knew what the law was. I knew a little secret. I go, let me tell you a little secret. In Arizona in the late 70s, they took the entire election law and they threw it in the trash and rewrote it into the two-party system. And they said, you have to vote for this. Now, keep in mind, this is the height of the Cold War. It's the late 70s. Soviet Union is, being all bad and everything. You got the campaign going in to Ronald Reagan. And the biggest thing that they were worried about was the fact that Jimmy Carter, an unknown Democrat from nowhere, all of a sudden became president. And they were like, what the heck is up with that? Well, it was because they didn't nominate Ronald Reagan in 76. They went ahead and went with Gerald Ford. That was a mistake. But so Ronald Reagan kind of worked on his ranch waiting for 80. During that time, you had this big anti-communist thing. That was the boogeyman, all right? It was the Cold War and the domino effect of, and we got to spend all kinds of money and go whip butt. Then you had inflation was getting crazy, gas lines. I mean, I graduated high school in 79. I remember when, my 65 Chevelle Super Sport, when gasoline went from, 50, 70 cents a gallon to $1.40, I went, whoa, what the heck? When you can see your gas gauge go down as fast as your speedometer goes up on a car, you're going, yeah, that sucks. So what happened was you had this environment that was conducive to, we gotta stop communism. So they took all the election laws in Arizona and they totally rewrote it, repackaged it, and said it was anti-communist because it banned the Communist Party. But they made parties of the state. They made the Republicans and the Democrats parties of the state. They had their primaries then funded by the state, the taxpayers, and they would eliminate competition from third party and independents. And they did all this kind of stuff that later I would challenge all these, because I was a dumb kid, didn't know any better. Okay. But when I did this, because I saw the long story, the evil of and how they get away with all this crap that they do, because they eliminated competition at the ballot box. They eliminated the ability to oppose them. And I go, and I was Republican. And I said, nope, nope, homie's going to be independent, get standing duty. Because I see this is the crux of where this is at. That's why I'm always going back to, you're still voting. I mean, of course, they already took that over a long time ago. And if they didn't control who got on the ballot, then they started doing this computer tabulation thing without any kind of backup. And when they do, they still lie about it. I mean, it's just, I'm good. I can go on and on about how convinced I am that voting is a waste of time. But I had to prove it to myself. And that's who counts to me, I can tell you that. So you need to go into it. You want to bring game, think you got something to tell, yeah, well, bring it on. So what happened was, 1991, I get my standing for the lawsuit to challenge all the election laws that I saw were unconstitutional, and we went to federal court. Well, what happened then is all of a sudden, a year after I do that, it was 1992, Ross Perot in February gets on Larry King and says, well, I'd run if everybody gave me $5. Even though he had the money, he said, yeah, somebody give me $5, we'll run. Well, they started, he goes to his hotel room and the bellboy or whatever is giving him $5. I saw you on Larry King. Go, man, go. Oh, and then it started. But I had some little links into the Ross Perot campaign. I'll tell you that story when we come back and see what really happened and how we got the first contract on America, and you'll start to see it play out again. You stay right there.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Love ain't the same on the south side of town. You could look, but you ain't gonna find it around. It's the same old story, same old song and dance. My friend, it's the same old story, same old story, same old song and dance.
we started doing a bunch of these. It was easy. And we did a newspaper called Citizens Taking Initiative, to where we would file an initiative, put the full text in, which is usually short. It was a constitutional thing, less than a page. We'd put it up, and then whoever did it would argue for the reasons. They'd say, look, this is why, this is what the problem is, this is what's going on, this would be a solution, boom, done. Next one. Well, it got to where one year we did over 36 of these. And the front page of the B section, the Arizona Republic, second legislature convenes. Okay, well, they were talking about all the stuff that we did. Well, what would happen is a lot of legislators, they go, hey, well, that's a good idea, and that's a good idea, and that's a good idea. I never thought of that, and the people like that one. So a third of these would become bills, and then people would support them and so on. Things like concealed carry, unrestricted concealed carry. That finally getting done started with us being real buttheads about it back in 93. So I've been doing this a long time. Know the effect. Know how you change a culture, how you change the people, how they demand this of their legislators. How, you know, all of a sudden you can't talk to any candidate for office, regardless of their political persuasion here in Arizona, about them without them telling you how pro-gun they are. Okay? Well, there's a reason for that. It's because you just make the state pro-gun, pro-self-defense, pro-victims get to defend themselves kind of thing. I mean, we do all kinds of stuff. So we understand the power of this. So, okay, so it's 1991. I file a lawsuit challenging all the unconstitutional election laws that gave special rights and privileges based on what party you registered with. If you got, like, special rights or privileges that someone else that didn't register as Republican or Democrat, then you're going, I call BS on that. I think this is bad. I think everybody should know this. We filed the initiative, and they couldn't do this as a constitutional amendment. And we did all this stuff, got a lot of attention, a little press. Because I figured out, this is before the internet, you don't get any coverage unless you get a government number. Did you get your government number? A government number is an arrest number, an initiative filed number, a lawsuit number, an arrest number. Once you get your government number, well, that's like starting pistol for the traditional media to come out, the old media, for them to come up and go, okay, we get to write a story about this. I guess we have to because they got a government number. They're in the system. That's how it worked. So when anybody comes to me, how do you get this attention? Well, we need to get more attention. I go, you got your government number? And they're like, what? You got to have a government number. Without the government number, they don't cover. It doesn't matter how. I've been told many things. You know, it'd be hundreds of people there and so on. There's no government number involved, or it's an issue that they want to cover. It doesn't make it, whether they were there or not. Where's the government number? Did anybody get arrested? No government number. So that's why you have this civil disobedience. A lot of people are learning. Got to have a government number. Got an arrest. It still applies in a lot of ways. Okay. So what happens in 1991, I filed the lawsuit challenging 44 election laws of the state of Arizona. So I understood election law in Arizona. I mean, I knew the history. I knew why they changed it. You know, this is an interesting story on this segment with this. What happened was a guy named Stephen Davis, he was the only Republican to unseat an incumbent Democrat in the first election after Watergate. What was significant about that is Republicans were not in favor during after Watergate, Nixon, Vietnam, all that kind of stuff. He was the only one that unseated an incumbent Democrat as a Republican. He was in his 20s. He's a young guy, conservative. He's out there kicking butt. He wins. Then, after his first session in a two-session term, he goes, oh, man, this sucks. And he registers Libertarian in the mid-70s. He registered Libertarian, no ballot status, so he had to, you know, get on the ballot as an independent, which is very difficult. He gets all the signatures. He runs in a three-way race. He loses. He comes in second by 1,000 votes. They freaked out. We got no, heck no. We got to change all the election laws to eliminate this kind of thing. That's right after that. Is when they changed all the election laws in Arizona. And it's not just Arizona. As I did the research for the lawsuit, this is stuff was happening all over the country. Because remember, in 1980, there was an independent running for president called Anderson. You guys remember that? There was a bunch of case law that came out of their opposition to the election laws the way they were and all that kind of stuff. So I understood from the beginning what the whole point was. It was to eliminate competition. It was, you may choose from communist candidate A or fascist candidate B, and oh, guess what? You go high enough up on the left or right side of the pyramid, it's the same guys in charge. The banks. and whoever else in different levels. So I'm going, okay, I get it. So what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and challenge all this. I don't care what the judges say. Not even my point. I just want everybody to know what's going on. Oh, and then here came the Perot campaign. Oh, and a little bitty thing they didn't know about Arizona law. Well, I'm going to share it with you and where we are now. We'll be right back.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Country. I wasn't the only one, but we weren't connected. When we first started getting emails in 94, we started realizing what was happening all over the country at the same time. The people didn't have communications, but, you know, all the parties did. You know, they got their marching orders from the big De La, whoever they are, and then they just told their media buddies and their local whatever, and they did, and you got your contract on. All right? That's what happens. Now, what happened was I filed, right when I filed the lawsuit to bring attention to the lawsuit and to the initiative and to the issues, I'm just one guy, you know, and my family, and I'm just doing because I can. You know, I do what I got to do, and then sometimes people go with me. And what I did is I go, how can I bring attention to this and bypass the media? This is before the internet. What I did is I went and learned how to fly ultralights. And what I was doing, and I had the logo all done up, I had the route, the landing areas, I had the map, everything, you know, the letterhead. I was building all this up. And in April, I was going to take off in Page, Arizona, which is up in the northeastern part of the state. And you take off there, and you make a big deal with the local press, and you say, yeah, you know, I'm doing this because of this. And I take off, and I take, you know, film and pictures of I'm going. And then I have a chase crew that go around and land at the next little airport, you know, a little strip. Or somebody's farm or whatever. And I'd go from small town to small town to small town to small town. And each time you would get more pictures, a little newspaper coverage, and you start building a portfolio of all the local small media around the state. And it went all around the state. And it was going to take me over a month to do this. But what happened was, and I really missed that I didn't do this because we converted it into something else, but I had it all planned. I'm ready to go. Well, what put it on hold was Perot announcing he was running, because I understood the election laws and that he wasn't going to be able to get on the ballot in Arizona. They kind of forgot that part when they changed the election laws. So I go, yeah, well, you can run all you want in Arizona unless they change the law. You're not going to get on the ballot. So I knew, I'm going, oh, I know where this is going to go. So what my plan was, the reason I was doing it that way, is because if the entire state and all these small community papers and everything knew what was going on, and you take and you fax to the next one you're going to land at, all of the other reports that were being done and all the other communities that you'd already been, well, of course, they'd be more interested. By the time you get to Phoenix, you know, they're going to have to cover it, in my opinion. Well, they've done what they wanted to do, but it would be more difficult for them to hold back on this information. That was the plan. Then Perot announced on Larry King that he was interested in running. I didn't know anything about Perot, doesn't matter. Gazillionaire, he's going to get some attention. He started getting a lot of attention. So I go, oh, I already know. I saw into the future. I saw, you know, 6, 7, 8 months into the future, because this is February. The election was that November. I knew that Arizona was the last primary in the nation. We didn't have our primary until mid-September. It would have been, they changed the law where it's like late August now, but it used to be that was like last week. I mean, you had less than 2 months, you know, like 7 weeks or something before the general election. What they had, when they changed all the election laws in the late 70s, they didn't provide for the 8 electors at the time that they needed, the electors to be on the ballot so that they could be voted for an independent candidate. They forgot that part. They didn't have a provision by which an independent candidate could even be on the ballot in Arizona, and I knew this. They didn't. There was a guy named Jack Gargan at the time that was doing full-page ads. It was called Throw. THRO or something. Throw the hypocritical rascals out. Many of you older Americans, you might remember this. It would be a full-page ad. We're for throwing the hypocritical rascals out. You know, don't vote for any incumbents, blah, blah, blah. And he would do a full-page ad in major newspapers and say, and send me more money, and I'll do another ad. Well, a lot of people did. Jack Gargan. Can't believe I remember his name. He was out of Florida, I think. So when this Perot thing happened, he contacted Perot. He goes, yeah, you got to run. I'll help you and do whatever and so on. And he knew who I was and what I was doing. They contacted me and, you know, can you help or be part of and so on. I said, no. I know what you do need, though, you know, because I didn't want to get involved in any particular campaign and so on because I didn't know anything about Perot anyway. It doesn't matter. What I said is you need to talk to a gentleman named Richard Winger. Richard Winger was a ballot access expert, and he had a news, he still does, it's called Ballot Access News out of San Francisco. He's a libertarian, and he is the expert on ballot access for the Libertarian Party and anybody else. So I said, you need to talk to Richard Winger. Well, they got in contact with him. They all flew down. They went to Dallas or something to meet with the Perot campaign. And I go, good, I did my part. Here's how it is. Arizona, you can't do. You need to fix and have a nice day. Okay, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. Then they wanted to meet with me. They wanted to talk to me. They wanted to explain it to me. And I'm just going, look, I don't care. I want anything to do with it, but what I will do is I'll contact the some of the reporters and the columnists at the Arizona Republic here, and I said, look, when this breaks, and it will, you're going to need to understand that he can't get on in Arizona. This is going to be the last state. Every 49 states he's on except Arizona. And, oh, we're going to be the center of the universe then. You watch. Yeah. Go away. 6-7 weeks go by. Ross Perot would land his plane anywhere, and there would be thousands of people that would greet him everywhere. I remember my now working at Moody's, you know, he just graduated Penn State University. He's working at NASDAQ in Washington and so on. And he's going, oh, this Perot thing, it won't mean nothing. I go, why would you say that? He goes, I saw in a taxi cab had butcher paper in the rear window saying, run, Ross, run. See, that's not professional. You got people just writing on cardboard and so on. But anytime I see anything, it's just the people doing it. Yeah, that's not a campaign. I'm going, don't you get it? I mean, it's people. That's more powerful than any. You could have all kinds of mass-generated signs. It's the people. This is going to be much bigger than you guys think. That's why I knew what was going to happen with this Ron Paul thing. I'd already been through this before. Now, of course, nobody knew what Ross Perot really was about. He's a little mini-fascist. You know, give me the power, and I'll fix it, and let's go, you know, raid all the public housing, and we'll get all the drug down and get that. So he certainly wasn't a libertarian, but that wasn't the point. He was not them. He was not Clinton. He was not Daddy Bush. That was the point. Plus, he had a thing for Daddy Bush anyway. So what happened was, I'm going, all right. Yeah, he didn't like him. So I'm going, all right. What was the history behind that? Well, Bush was part, you know, he's involved in the CIA, used to be director and all this kind of stuff. You remember when there was something... something Eagles, you know, Squadron of Eagles, something Eagles. It was a book that Perot wrote about when Iran fell. He had a lot of employees with Perot Systems that was there, and they made a movie about it. He went and hired some mercenaries that went through all this stuff to go and get his people and break them out of the prison. It was amazing. It was a great story. So that's where he had his claim to fame. He's just like, screw it, I just go do it myself, and the government, what good are you? So everybody's like, cool, man, right on, man. He's getting under that hood and fix it. Going to shovel out the barn. And all these kind of colloquialisms that were going along with it. So I'm going, all right. So he had met with the ballot access experts that I knew, and they had a bead on it and so on. And I talked to the reporters that I knew, and I said, look, when this goes, here is, you know, Hughes and Luce was the law firm that represented Perot. And that was kind of the closest he had to a campaign at the time. I said, here, you call these guys, and they'll direct you to whatever. Here you go. I'm done with it. It was about a week or two later that all of a sudden I wake up 5 a.m, my phone's ringing. It didn't stop for 4 days. This is what happened. The columnist, in her, she was down at the Senate press room at the Arizona State Legislature, and she had a column. She would later become the editorial page editor here at Arizona Republic, and then later she went to the Dallas Morning News. Her name was Kevin Casey. I can't remember. So she was a columnist, and she'd write all this stuff. And fine, one last little paragraph, she goes like this. She goes, "Oh, and all you guys bugging me about this Perot thing, well, if you care about that here, call Ernest Hancock at 365-006. You just call him." Well, she didn't tell me, of course. All of a sudden, the phone rang and rang and rang. And over 4 days, I had this large, you know, kind of a post-it thing, a tower that was kind of a swirl tower about 10 inches high. It was multicolor or whatever. All I did is I go, whoa, just give me your name, address, and phone number, and I'll make sure you get some information. So I did that, and that whole thing went down. It was at least 800, 900, 1,000 people. And I put it in a database called VisiCalc. It was all back in the day in my Model 4 TRS-80 Tandy computer, okay? I printed it all out and separated them by zip code so that everyone, I sent everyone that requested information a list of everyone that requested information with their zip code so that they could get their own guys. So everybody knew everything. And that was the beginning. That was the seed that started the explosion and why Arizona was the highest one. Tell you more about how that evolved when we come back. This is stuff I don't think I know. I know I've lived it. And then the contract on America.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Stop me now. I'm having such a good time. I'm having a ball. Stop me now. If you want to have a good time,
just give me a call. Don't stop me now. I'm having a good time. I'm having a good time telling you this information. You need to know this. This is good history because it segues right into this contract on America thing. And I'm just going, so here we go. We went ahead and had a whole program that we were doing this ultralight flying around the state. We had a lot of the landing strips were done. We had the plane, the little ultralight, you know, picked out. I've been doing training. We had the weather thing was going on. We're all ready to go. Had the money saved up for this. All of a sudden, I'm getting 15 gazillion calls because the Arizona Republic didn't want to deal with it. And they said, yeah, you want to go bug Ernie. Well, they did. And I got this enormous database. Everybody wanted that database. So I took it. Instead of, you know, I don't like accumulating information. And I go, no, that's how you get bumped off, okay? So I learned that from the Don Bowles thing, an investigative reporter in the late 70s, that was, his car got blown up. You know, he did a bunch of investigative reporting, had it on organized crime here, and all of a sudden, boom, his car gets blown up. And he's in the museum in Washington, D.C. with his little B-210 there. It's all blown up. Okay? So I understood that, you know, instead of taking me out, you got to take out 5,000 of my closest friends and all y'all. So that's just how I operate. So what happened is I had this database, and I separated it. It went down to Alpha Graphics and printed out, you know, just like mailing labels, and it had the name, address, phone number. So I took and separated them in the VisiCalc, the old program, TRS Model 4 Tandy computer back in the day. You know, 5 meg additional memory was the size of a bread box. I mean, back in the day. So I took that information and I reduced it down to I get as many as possible on a sheet of paper front and back, and it was all separated by zip code. And then I sent everybody on that list a copy of everybody on that list using the letterhead of Arizona's Flight for Independence, which is what this thing was called, Independence, D-E-N-T-S. So when I sent this out, everybody's like, "Woo, man, there's like, it's organized." And I go, "No. You organize on your own. You have a list of everyone that called me and all your neighbors in your area. Just, everybody got it." Well, they went, "Cool." And it spontaneously self-organized. There would be thousands of people that would meet on a regular basis all over the state of Arizona in support of doing this Ross Perot thing. Well, what they didn't understand is I didn't want to have anything to do with it. You know, it's a people thing. Here, you guys go do it. What happened was Hughes & Luce is a law firm that was Perot's law firm that represented him out of Dallas, and they sent out a couple of attorneys, and then a local, some Republican day law guy that wanted to, whatever, he's some Politico guy that, you know, pick me. So they had me come have lunch with him. I said, you know, look, I tell you what, because I didn't trust anybody at the time. And I go, and I still don't. So I go, what I'm going to do, said my friends. And I go, and you. And I go, we'll go ahead and I'll pay for my own dinner. And since I'm poor, we're going to Poncho's Buffet, which is like, I don't know, $2.49 for a Poncho's meal or something. And I'm taking my son with me. Well, he was only about 4 years old at the time, five, something like that. So I take him and said, my son's sitting right here. You're not allowed to lie to me. That was the first thing out of my mouth. So he sat there and he go, well, we need you to come work in the campaign and do blah, blah. I go, no, I don't need to. And he go, well, if you don't come in the campaign, we're not able to list on our financial or federal election commission reports, you know, all the work that you've been doing. I go, good. That's one reason why I don't need to come in. I go, it's called the First Amendment. I can do whatever the heck I want as long as I don't have it. I go, if I was going to go by, you know, I was doing it for the campaign or something, heck, I'm already over the limit. I just sent the information to everybody. I don't have to worry about it anymore. Because I took all the money that I had accumulated to do this flight. I had, I don't know, $3,000-$5,000 that I did on this mailing. And then I said, okay, because what was my goal? My goal was not for me. It wasn't for Perot. It's for people to understand that the election laws were jacked up. And this was a perfect opportunity. And I explained to them, there is no method for him to get on the ballot in Arizona. It doesn't exist for a nonpartisan, independent presidential candidate to have presidential electors selected that he can sign off on who they are and then put them on the ballot to be able to vote for him for the Electoral College. It doesn't exist. And we're the last state. So I'll guarantee you, if he does this seriously, and he does it in all these other states, and he's on the ballot, and he's really working for it, Arizona's going to have themselves some problems. And sure as heck it did. And in the end, I wound up writing the legislation that would allow for it, because they didn't even know what the heck they were doing. They don't know. They didn't care. They didn't want to do it. So eventually you're going to have to do it this way, this way, this way. They put it in legislation, boom, they passed it eventually. But, man, a bunch of legislators, ooh, they didn't like me none too much back then. Because I'm going, look, I'll tell you why they can't do it. It's because that person right there won't let it go through their committee to be able to do it. And they went, ooh, who do we got to go after? Well, then that caused other problems down the road. But they got it passed. So now you can get on. During this time, I saw what was happening. There was one gentleman in Tucson that had a Hallmark card company, and he had some kind of a promo little teddy bear or something, and he had his wife made these little vests that went on the teddy bear. You know, I'm for Perot, and then you had, you know, read my lips, you know, vote for Perot or something like that, and because Daddy Bush had done Read My Lips, No New Taxes, and then he passed taxes and all that kind of stuff, and that had a lot of the Republicans mad and why they were supporting Perot. So all of a sudden, this whole big thing gets enormous. And all of a sudden, in a three-way race, he's tracking over 20, almost 30%. What the heck do you do then? He could possibly win. Well, then he pulled out, saying that they had threatened his daughter. She was getting married, and they're going to expose all kinds of stuff and play dirty politics, which doesn't surprise me. Of course they would. But then what happened was you had people all over the country. They were very angry. You know, even probably more angry than when Ron Paul pulled, you know, in Texas in, I think, April or so, or May. So what happened is they filed suit. They said it's breach of contract. You said this and that and going to do that, boom. And he had lawsuits all over the country suing Perot that all the promises he made, he was going to do whatever, and then he pulled out. Finally, it got to the point. He's like, you know, I think I might be liable, breach of contract. And some of these things, you know, ooh, it was better that he just came back in. So he came back and still he got like 20% or something. The highest was in Arizona. After that, when they started planning this contract with America, then I started getting the visits because they wanted the database. I said, well, you know, there's like, I don't know, 1,000 people out there that got it. Go get them. And they didn't know who to get hold of and whatever. And they wanted it on electronic form, or they're going to take the database and they were going to, you know, enter it for me and then pinky swear, destroy it. They would never use it again. And yeah, right. Well, this was the group that's coming out of Washington, came to meet with me, and we were doing Citizens Taking Initiative at the time. And all of a sudden, everybody that I knew in politics were pressuring me to meet with these guys. Well, one of the guys was Doug Weed. Doug Weed, you may remember him. He came out later saying, you know, he was in support of Ron Paul and all that kind of stuff. What he really was is he was represented the Christian right, the movement. That was a voting block that he was part of, just like they're using this Tea Party thing. So they met with me, and they got impressed upon me that this is important and joined the team. And they had Congressman now, Jeff Flake, was the communications director for the Goldwater Institute at the time. There was another group called the Lincoln Caucus. Her name was Sidney Hay. She's always running for Congress, and she ain't made it yet. But her cohort in crime was a guy named Trent Franks that I went to church with. And he is now a congressman from Arizona. Well, they had a group called the Lincoln Caucus. Well, that was a conservative, whatever, but it was mostly around using the Christian right and a pro-life movement. That was their voting block for them. Then you had the Goldwater Institute, was kind of this libertarian free market kind of guys. Then there were some other people there. They met with my co-editor with Citizens Taken Initiative, a guy named Gary Fallon, that would later run for governor as a libertarian. He was ran for mayor as a libertarian here in Phoenix. He was a well-known good guy. He was a pro-life libertarian. So they felt comfortable going to him first. He goes, well, I don't have it. You got to talk to Ernie. So they set up the luncheon meeting. He said, you got to go, Ernie. I said, I know what they want. I don't want to play. And they go, yeah, you got to go. So I go and I sit down with this meeting. All the pressure came on. We need database because we got to get rid of Democrat Senator Dennis DeConcini so that we can put Congressman John Kyle in that position. We want to scare off DeConcini and get him not to run again in the midterm elections that's coming up in 94, just like what they're doing now. 2 years after 08 is 2010. 2 years after 92 is 94. Contract on America. That's what was coming, and they wanted to target all of these different individuals, and DeConcini was on top of their list. We want your database of all of these activists, the people that showed up with their signs, the people that wanted to save America. All these people already give it to us. Give it. And I go, no. These people did not give me this information for me to hand it over to you. Well, then all the, you know, promises and what we can do for you and all that kind of stuff. Nope. I understand. You guys are just part of the problem along with. And then Doug goes like this. He says, well, Ernie, let me tell you a story. There were two tribes on the side, on the shores, opposite shores of this lake. And they fought over fishing and access to the lake and everything. And they fought and fought and fought. And young men died. But while the elders were in the middle of the lake discussing, young men didn't die. So we gotta keep it in contain so young men don't die. And I'm not even sure what they were saying. And at the time, there was the movie Crocodile Dundee was popular, you know, and I think the second sequel had come out. And there was a line in there where he said, you know, it sounds like two fleas arguing over who controls the dog. And I go, you guys are just fleas. When the dog wakes up, when he starts scratching, you're both done. I don't have anything to do with it. And I said, it's nice meeting y'all. And I left. Then I got the call. Oh, you want to hear about that call when we come back in the next hour. And then we'll talk more with Scott Decker. He came to Arizona just after this time, and he got a lesson he's going to share with us, too. Oh, you guys are getting some history today on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock.